Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart, and today I'm joined by somebody who's been working on coaching and long-term goal setting with her, you know, 20 of the people that roll up to her for the last few years, and wanted to bring her on and so she can teach us how she does it. It's one of the things that, you know, we all talk about, and in theory, you know, we all think we do, but getting really tactical about how can we actually make sure these things are practical isn't something practical and actually get followed up on isn't something I've seen a whole lot of. And so I wanted to bring Kelly Del Curto on the show. Kelly, welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Thanks. I'm really excited as well. I started my, I spent time as a hockey coach when I was really young. I coached my younger brother with my dad. My dad was the head coach. And so coaching, I feel like, has always been sort of a big part of me. But I never did a ton of work to sort of integrate that side of things with my work side of things. So anytime we can get in and talk about coaching and not just sort of managing and like, how do we get more out of our people? How do we make sure, like, how do we feel like we're having a real impact on the team that roll up to us? That's sort of right in the sweet spot of where things that I want to keep learning about. And I'm hoping everybody listening is probably in the same boat.
Absolutely.
So, you know, with all that said, why should we even invest in long-term coaching?
Yeah. I know that when I got into leadership, this idea of coaching was what really sparked my interest. And I think it's really exciting in theory. And then you go to do it. And just like you said, you have no idea if it's actually working. And so what we're going to talk about today is how you actually make it really actionable. And you give yourself a framework so that you can say, am I pushing my reps and setting really good goals for them? Are they bought into those goals? And then how are they actually doing against them? And I find it to be really motivating as a leader. And I know my reps have felt really motivated creating some of these plans.
Perfect. And just for context, you've got your director of sales over at Lever, mm-hmm. 20 account execs that are, or 20 people that roll up under you. You said three managers and then sort of split the team sort of like.
Yeah, that's 17 reps. Yep.
Dang. And so they're all using this format here?
Yeah. Yeah. And it comes in different formats, and no plan is kind of the same. Mm-hmm. But it's something that they all create themselves. And then we work on, they'll either roll it up into their manager. And then for my managers, we do the same activity.
That's great. And that's one of the things I'm really excited about. In my journey to becoming an entrepreneur, I've learned a ton about goal setting and sort of that long-term planning. And I've always had a tough time sort of reconciling it between, company planning. And so how does that trickle down to the individual account exec level? Because my goal every month, every quarter is just hit quota, blow it out. Like, that's plain and simple. So I'd love to, so maybe we can go in a little bit deeper later on and we can show some specific examples.
Yeah, absolutely. And you make a good point too, which is how do you make sure that the goals that your reps set are helping you achieve the company's overall goals? But I think that if you only set yourself one goal, which is quota, you're missing a huge opportunity for development. And so I think that's what this is intended to do, is get people thinking about what else is there that I can build around quota, which will probably help you blow it out even more.
Very cool. So yeah. How did you figure all this out?
Yeah, so I am not going to take credit for this. This was originally brought to us. So Lever believes a lot in learning and development for every member of the team, whether it's salespeople, engineers, marketing. And so they hired a company called Epic Teams. And there's a woman over there, Shannon, who is the co-founder and also has a PhD. She's a really smart lady. And she brought this format to us, and she calls them individual impact plans. And team impact plans. And the whole idea behind it is, how do you as an individual make an impact at the company? And how does your team make an impact at the company?
That's great. I love it when I know so many companies chop their sort of training and coaching, and they're leveling up people up budgets, a few years back. And so always good to hear when companies are continuing to invest. And so thanks for the shout out to Shannon. I'll throw a link to her LinkedIn in the show notes there. So talk to me about, what does the process look like?
Yeah. So the whole goal is that as a company, you're creating team goals. And then every individual on that team is creating their own plan that not only helps them achieve some of their personal goals, but also think about how they're going to make a dent on that team plan. So it comes in two forms. The first step is for you to do a team plan where you set goals as a group. And then after that, you meet with each individual and they start to map out what are the small steps that they make towards that larger goal.
Gotcha. And so can you give me an example of like what that team goal on a sales team would look like?
Yeah. So usually it's not just one. So the important part is that this is something that's documented. I think it's really important. Yesterday I was doing a little research on why goals stick and why we actually achieve things and why we don't. And if you write down your goals, apparently people much smarter than I say that you're more likely to achieve them by like 33%. And so you have this documented piece of paper that not only sets goals, but it also establishes a mission for both your team and yourself as an individual. So that if you ever get off track or you miss one of those goals, you can go back to why am I here? What is my purpose and what's fulfilling me?
Right on. And so can you give me like, so what are those, what would that look like on one of your teams? What would a team goal or some examples of team goals look like?
Yeah. So,
I'm thinking like headquota. I'm stuck in the book this amount of meetings, hit this number of follow-ups, close this number of deals.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll give you an example. A couple of years ago, I had a small business team that was consistently hitting quota. They were kind of setting the pace. And so they wanted to find ways to challenge themselves. And we had added a bunch more reps. And you know that when you add more reps and the leads don't necessarily change, things get a little tougher. So they self-diagnosed that if we were going to hit the more aggressive goals that we had, something had to give. So first goal they made was quota. And I did not prompt this. They went out of their way to say, let's do 120% of the quota. And then the second goal was in order to get there, we have to revamp our outbound process. As a team, we've kind of been winging it and we need to standardize it. And so they each broke down a different part of the outbound process, like cadences, messaging, metrics and measuring against them, and then practicing outbound pitches. And those all got folded into that broader goal.
Gotcha. So in this context, your reps they're doing a little bit of their own hunting. And so you're working on their outbound prospecting and gotcha.
Yeah. And then I've had other teams who've said, you know what, as a team, we need to be role-playing more, or as a team, we need to go mentor the SDRs because a lot of us want to be managers someday. And I think that we get the reputation of being a team that mentors. So it often will depend on the personality of your team, but ask them what's standing in our way of hitting that number. And usually they'll find plenty of things that they feel like you should be fixing. And this is your opportunity to turn it back on them and go, okay, this is all on us. Let's create some solutions. What do we need to fix as a team and what do we have control over?
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you break it. So that's team level, and that's just you're sitting down with the team saying, all right, what do we need to do, you know, to hit our goals? And what
yeah. Like? Yeah. So like, we'll get really tactical. I recommend you do this in kind of a team meeting setting. I've set it as an hour in the past. I almost always go past that. So lately I've been doing about an hour and a half, and make sure you got a really big whiteboard and you kind of we're going to share with you the format for some of these, but you write out all of the different categories of this plan. And then you're really a facilitator. I kind of give myself the job of scribe and question asker. But I do not form their goals. I think that's really important because if you're dictating what the goals are, they're not going to feel ownership over it. And the way this works really, really well is when they get really excited over the goals and what they can create.
Awesome. But you're coming into it with a little bit ahead of time. Like, hey, here's what are you sort of setting that up? Is like, these are our targets for the quarter, the year, whatever.
Like, yeah. So, I'll often kind of give them some prompts, like here are some of my goals, that we're kind of striving towards. Here's the quota that we're trying to achieve. Here's maybe how many more reps we're going to add in the long term. But these all also are conversations that you probably have already been having with your team. And so the seed is planted, and then ahead of time, let them know that they're going into this. And this is going to be kind of a team plan setting. Now do not be surprised if you get a lot of eye rolls. My favorite moment was, maybe 3 months ago, I did this with one of my manager's teams, and it was the first time he was doing it. So I was guiding him through it, and the team audibly sighed when I told them we had to do it. But none of them had actually gone through it before. They had just heard about it. By the end of it, they were so fired up. They said, "We're really sorry that we were eye rolling and being a little sarcastic about it, but this is really helpful because now I feel fired up as a team that we can go crush these goals."
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's always a good spot to be. Yeah. And so it takes 90 minutes. You sort of share your goals. You get feedback on, okay, what do you all think we need to improve? What do we want to be working on as a team? Mm-hmm. And this is sort of, I guess, one component is going to be quota, because naturally, sure. But then it's all sort of the soft skills that help you get better.
And encourage them to kind of vent what has been frustrating. I think it's pretty empowering for people to identify the problems and then the solutions. And so they both feel like they can be heard. They can say, "Hey, I really don't feel like we're able to hit our number because of X, Y, or Z." And then turn it back on, okay, well, what are some of the small steps that we could take as a team to change that? And usually you'll kind of turn it around. If there's been times when I've had reps that I knew were going to be kind of on the negative side. And so one trick is, if you've got a rep that you know is kind of the person that's going to turn things around, be the positive influence on the team, tap them ahead of time and tell them what you're doing and just ask them to keep the team on track. I always have someone who's like my hype guy or girl who's in the room that helps get people back on track. But most of the time, people will be really solution oriented in something like this because it's their goal, not the goal that I'm giving them.
For sure. It's okay. And they'll come with sort of, it gives them a place to channel all that energy into, "Hey, you've got a lot of frustration. I need you to be the hype girl."
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I need you to, or it's usually the person who's hyping up the team is usually the person you would tap to be a team lead. Mm-hmm. So they're usually naturally solution oriented. And so they're your safeguard if things get really negative, where people are saying, "Hey, I don't think we're going to hit our number for all these reasons. And I don't think there's any solutions. And like, I don't want to create goals." I've never, ever had that happen, but I've always had a safeguard of someone who can say, "Okay, everyone, we're here though. We might as well create some goals and ways that we can influence this."
That kind of attitude though, that's almost like, "All right, goodbye.
Yeah. See you later." And that's why I've honestly not had it. And you'll be able to tell. It's actually a really informative exercise. If you have someone sitting in the corner who's just not participating or eye rolling the whole time, you know, ask them if they want to be there. But most of the time, what will happen is they'll see all of their peers getting fired up about finding solutions. And then everyone feels very, very enabled.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so you're basically the scribe for this meeting, goes on for about 90 minutes. You've got some prompts to, you know, get them talking and going. I imagine you get a bunch of salespeople in the room and all of a sudden it just, like, it's been 90 minutes. You're like, "Wow, we've got to wrap this up."
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of two things. Either it's crickets at first and people don't know what to say. Or the opposite, everyone's talking a lot. If you've got the room that's maybe uneasy, doesn't know what they want to contribute, or they don't want to be wrong, one trick I've come up with is have everyone write down two ideas for a goal on a Post-it, and then they have to go around the room and everyone puts the Post-it on the board.
Love that. Yeah, we've done something similar in when we were doing like product management pieces. Mm. And you sit there and you're like, "Okay, everybody's got 2 minutes and just write down as many ideas on Post-it notes as you can." And then you get some people that are like really thoughtful and they'll put one up that's like super well thought through, and others are going to put like 30 up.
That don't make sense.
Yeah. Or like, they're just like one of those thinkers that, like, you've got the thinkers that are going to take things and go super wide. And then you got the thinkers that are going to like narrow in on certain things. And I find that's a really helpful exercise. When people want to, when they've got a ton on their mind, and you give them that chance to sort of share it all up front, then they can kind of let go of that. They know it's up there, it's on the board, and we'll get to it eventually.
Yeah. And I find that a lot of times when you do that exercise, especially with a group, a sales team of maybe to eight people is you'll start to see themes converge. And so another thing, you can play scribe. I also will sometimes tap a rep to help me theme out some of those ideas. And so they'll start to group the themes like, okay, this theme is on outbound. This theme is on us getting our pitch better. And then we'll consolidate it into one really clearly formed goal. The post-it note exercise also works really well with the first section that I use to kick off the whole session, which is that they have to come up with their team mission statement. And so I'll ask them to write on a post-it adjectives that they think encapsulates what the team is or what the team wants to be. And then we get some really good ideas formed to write a clear mission statement.
And do you redo that mission statement every quarter or every time you do this?
That's a good question. So it really depends on the makeup of your team. I have a team right now that just went through a ton of transformation. I promoted some people left. And so we kind of turned around and everyone was new again. And so we did it a lot faster than we normally do. But usually every 6 months is fair. I think doing it any more than once a quarter, you're kind of wasting your time. And sometimes that mission statement, by the way, will be the same for a year. I've had that happen too.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Like the goal will change, but the mission stays the same if you've got the same core group. Everyone's got a little bit of a different take on the identity of the team.
Nice. So you start with, here are my goals, here's what our quota is, let's talk about our mission statement, and then get them to vent about what's frustrating.
Yeah, I actually start with the mission statement first, because I think what's important is that they all come together on what the identity of the team is, and then they create their goals. And the goals and the frustrations kind of come hand in hand.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. And that's where they're doing the, I don't think it's called idea storming, but that's the word that's stuck in my head.
The post-it brainstorming. Yeah.
Cool. Exactly. All right. So mission statement, then you share your goals. Here's the quota. Get them talking about what's, venting about what's been frustrating. What do we want to work on? What do we want to get better at? How do we need to level up? Mm-hmm. Then what?
Yeah. So I think what's really important is on kind of the team impact. You've got your goals, right? These are really tangible things. But then there's these very loose concepts that you can't put into a beautiful quota goal. So on the team piece, the third section is called norms and commitments. And so this is where you kind of establish some ground rules as a team. What do we want to be known as? What are some things that we want to get better at? And so I'll give you an example. One was my small business team felt like they were just overcomplicating their demos all the time. They felt like they were getting into feature battles. And so the norm they created is keep it simple. And so that was one of maybe five norms that we put on the sheet that quarter. Mm-hmm. And it was something that helped guide us later when we were working on things. Someone would shout out, keep it simple.
Nice. I know you said feature battle, but in my head, I heard rap battle. And I'm imagining all your reps.
Your feature battles in the form of rap battles?
That's obviously. You just get the two like opposing reps on the line.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. Next time I got to buy some software and it's down to two, be like, all right, guys, rap battle time.
Yeah. If I didn't know that this was being recorded, I would do like some corny, like beatboxing move, but I'm not going to do that.
I'll tell you what, I've paused the recording now. Let's go.
Yeah, sure. We need a couple tequilas for that.
Let me see. There's got to be a delivery service tequila before the recording's finished up here. All right. So norms and commitments.
Yeah.
As a team.
Yeah. And what I think is really important is you can say just like, what are some things that we do really well as a team that we should keep doing? So you could do the start, stop, and continue.
Nice.
That's a really good format. And so they're going to come up with things that they need to start doing, simplify our messaging, stop doing, feeling, like we're in a rat race at the end of the month, and then continue doing, we're really good at always like helping each other. So you get a couple of those things, and then sometimes that'll help you refine those goals that you already created. And some people will say, hey, given that, can we simplify that goal? So all of this, by the way, is a living document, and you're going to revisit it as a team later. And so feel comfortable that it's going to change.
Cool. Okay. And so we've got norms and commitments. We do the stop, start, continue, which I'm sure that breeds quite a bit of conversation that we, and probably some looping back to things that we talked about when you just opened it up and said, Ben, what's wrong? So once we've got the norms and commitments, this is kind of like your sort of like the mini culture for the team, right? Mm-hmm. This is the, you've got the mission statement that sort of tees it up. And then this is sort of the, here's how we do things. Like you said, keep it simple. And so what comes after norms and commitments?
Yeah. So now it's like, how do we actually make sure that we're doing this? Cause it's really nice in practice. And I hear from a lot of reps, this is really great. How do we make sure we actually stick to it? And so the last section is this concept of tracking progress. And so you track progress. It's really, what are our measures in place to stay accountable? And so they'll come up with great things. They'll say, hey, can we bring this up at every team meeting? Just do a quick check. Or, you know, hey, so-and-so is going to be our accountability buddy, and they're going to check in with us every now and then. But really take their guidance on how they want to be held accountable, because it'll stick a whole lot better.
Gotcha. Okay. And so that's the team impact plan. Mm-hmm. Before we move on, what are some ways that if people are listening going, this sounds awesome. We've got a template, by the way, in case we're not showing it, but I'll throw a link in the show notes so that you can sort of fill this out. We've got some examples as well that Kelly's been awesome enough to provide. So thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Where are some areas that people screw up? What are some things that you look at a plan, like one of your manager's plans, and you're like, come on, man.
That's never happened. but honestly, it hasn't happened. I think where people can get kind of hard on themselves is either making it too complicated, putting way too many goals. I mean, for a team, 5 should be max, and they should be really high level. The other piece is not assigning a directly responsible individual and accountability for each of those goals. So what I often do at the end is I'll say, okay, I want one person to represent each of these goals, or maybe two, they can buddy up. Mm-hmm. And your job is to make sure that we don't fall off track. Because I think just putting this down in paper and never coming back to it, it's a really feel good exercise that later no one's going to want to complete, because they're like, this was a waste of my time. We didn't actually do those things.
Totally.
Yeah.
Awesome. And so let's say when's the sales quota, you'll assign Sarah on the team, be like, all right, Sarah, it's your job to sort of watch over this for the sake of the team, like, or yeah, number of meetings booked or whatever. And you got to kick our ass if we're not showing up.
Yeah. And it might be, you even ask the team like, hey team, what do you want Sarah to do to keep us on track for this? A lot of the goals end up being, well, on my team, they end up being very actionable things. Like, we need to put a brief together on X, Y, or Z. And so it's usually someone spearheading the meeting to help the team write it. And so they're really just kind of coordinating and making sure we're doing it. But if you ever feel like you've got a really hard goal, you've set someone who's responsible, but you don't know how they're going to keep everyone accountable, ask the team. And they will come up with really great suggestions.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the lazy person's approach to doing all this. It's like, I don't want to have to think up all these good ideas. Let's let you think them up. And if they come from you, it'll be so much easier.
It's all about ownership. I think that's another way that this can really go off the rails, is you as a manager come in with it already filled out, or you've got an idea and you want the team to really own it and you just kind of enforce it. Mm. It has to be their idea. And so you can tell them, hey, here's a challenge that I'm dealing with. This was one idea I had for us as a team, but I'd love to hear how you want to do it. And sometimes they'll grab onto your idea and they'll love it. And sometimes they'll come up with something different. But what's important is that they really believe in it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So we got the team plan. Everybody's bought in. We've got the mission statement. We got our norms. We got our goals. We've got Sarah watching out for each of the, you know, the individual goals. And we know that if we're not hitting them, Sarah gets to nerf assassinate us every Friday.
Yep.
If we're running behind.
So, they come up with the worst punishments, by the way. I can't come up with them. They totally do.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know one guy that, you know, it was Zach Barney. I think he was like episode number 2, maybe even 1. I think I recorded him first, but we might've swapped around. It was like him and Matt Amundsen. And yeah, I think we talked about spiffs, and he's like, okay, so if we hit these, you know, this goal, like what do you all want? And they said, basically for every sale or every booked meeting or something, every 10 booked meetings for the month, they get to smush a pie in his face. And so he's got this video, this vine of him just like getting destroyed by pies for like 20 minutes. It's that phenomenal.
Yeah. My team, one year, their reward was they wanted to be able to create or choose my outfit for a week.
Awesome.
And I had a massive panic attack. Yeah. So
how did that go?
They'll come up. I'm telling you, they'll come up with way better spiffs or punishments than you ever could.
How did that go?
I think I got out of it. I don't remember how either. We like just barely missed the goal or my panic.
Self-sabotage there, hey?
I remember though the joy of them like brainstorming what they were going to make me wear was way more fun.
Yeah.
A lot of sweatpants were involved.
Yeah, that's fair. We had a guy, a rep who missed quota, and we had joked about like, you know, he was so confident he was going to close like this many, he was going to be like 160% of quota. And then I was like, I don't think you are. And so we kind of made a joking bet that like, okay, if you're wrong, we get to wax your legs.
Oh no.
And,
what happened?
I mean, procrastinated. Also, I thought that was like a really mean thing to do to somebody, but it was hilarious to think about. And so we had a team offsite, and our office is based in Vancouver. So we were like 5 hours east of here at this like small little town. We had a place on the lake. It was this little fishing lake. And so we had a couple of drinks, and somebody brought up like, hey, you remember that time when you were supposed to wax your legs? And he was like, yep. They're like, it was like, must have been like midnight, and the lake was freezing because it's, you know, Canada and it wasn't the summertime. And they're like, we'll let you off the hook if you go jump in the lake right now. So there's a great video of him like, yes, I don't have to wax my legs. Like this will be done within 2 minutes. I don't have to wait for my hair to grow back.
I think it probably was less painful too.
For sure. I think it was a hilarious bet. It was something you're never going to fall through on because like employment standards wise, I'm pretty sure you can't make.
I don't think you can like force waxing on
people. If they had done that to me, like, okay, you know, maybe, but you know.
Oh, man. Yeah. This is such a fun job, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
What other job can you do that?
I don't know. Accountants get rowdy. Maybe.
Oh man.
So we get the team plan. How do we make this? How do we track this down on an individual basis? Does it just sort of cascade down and say, okay, these are the teams. So now I'm an individual and I have the same goals. How do I make it, or do I make it personal a little bit?
Yeah, I think it's both, right? So now you've got kind of a guiding light for every individual on what the team is working towards. And so they can start to formulate some goals that push that needle farther. But I do think this fails if you don't also take into account the person's individual goals. So doing this on an individual basis is not only great for someone to get their thoughts in order on what they're trying to achieve for that quarter or that half, but this parlays excellent as a career conversation too. I think a lot of times we say we want to have career progression conversations, and then as leaders, we don't know how to have those conversations, and this makes it super actionable.
That's awesome. Because sometimes they're like, yeah, well, I want to be, you know, if it's as simple as I want to be an account exec in a year to two. It's like, great. We know that path. We've probably, if you're running a sales team of more than one, you know, person, you've probably dealt with that before. But when there's all the non-standard stuff, or when you've got somebody that's a little bit more junior, there's so many things to keep track of. There's so many different pieces that you need to do. And so, you know, I don't want to count the number of conversations where it's like, okay, so what are your career goals? What do you want to do? And that's, it just dies at the conversation there. Okay. So how do we like, I guess that sort of, you get the goal, how do you work backwards from the future and then sort of pull it into what's actionable this quarter?
Yeah. Yeah. And I also will say on the career piece, I mean, this works really well if they do know what they want to do. So let's say it's SDR wants to be an AE. That works really well because you can pivot the conversation to be less of a time-bound thing, which is often what stresses managers out if they don't know if the opening is coming up, into a more actionable, okay, well, in the meantime, what are the skills that you need so you don't fall on your face when you or what's going to help you crush that interview? Mm-hmm. And then on the ones that are kind of loose, what are some of the activities you can do to go figure out what you want to do? So I'll give you an example. So I had one rep who she just wasn't really sure if she wanted to stay in sales or if she didn't. And so one of the goals that she created as an individual was that she was going to go interview a couple of the leaders in a couple departments that she was thinking about and just have mentoring conversations. And it would help her with her sales regardless because she was getting to know our buyer a little better. And then what it ended up creating was she realized she wanted to go into enablement. So some of this will also help you guide those kind of research and figuring out career.
Cool. So that's really the first step here is career goals and then what happens next.
Yeah, I think actually, I mean, this mirrors the team plan that we just did. So first thing you always do is the mission statement. And the way I like to kick that off is I ask them why they like coming to work in the morning. Or you know what, I'll tell you, these individual plans are some of the best one-on-ones I've ever had, because they will reveal a lot about, like, if someone isn't happy, these conversations are a really good way to talk about it. And sometimes you get to know someone that you've been working with for a year and you had no idea that that was their motivator. So like, what gets you out of bed in the morning when you have a really good day at work? Why did you have a good day? Or like, what is it that fuels you every single day? And so the mission statement is that kind of like, what is my identity? What do I want to be known for? And like, why am I here?
Okay, cool. Yeah. So it's a little bit narrower because it's obviously focusing on specifically you as opposed to what does the team want to be known for?
Exactly. Yeah. What do you want to be known for? What motivates you? I mean, sometimes these are really complex conversations, so you'll have to rein it in. But I mean, like, I had one rep and his whole thing was, I just always want to be learning. Like, I never want to have a day where I didn't learn something. And then I had another rep who, she put it really succinctly. She said, I want to leave every day knowing I did my best for my customers and myself. And so you'll get like, people are really creative. They'll come up with a really nice pithy statement. And by the way, another tactical thing is print out the piece of paper you're writing it on and have them physically write on it. There's something about that like they'll go type it up later, but it's a really helpful exercise for them to get their ideas down on paper.
Cool. That's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody yeah. that's from our office right now is laughing at me because we don't have printers here.
You can like draw the boxes, right?
Sure. I'll buy some like printer paper. It gets people pens.
You just never print anything?
Nothing. Since day one, I knew I was going to be the tech support guy I've been that at every company I've worked at. And so when we started this company, I was like, we're just not going to buy a printer. And we've been around for 7 years. Like, sure, there've been a couple times people had to run to FedEx to get something or Kinko's yeah. or whatever to get something printed. But for the most part,
we don't use printers that often. My former boss, and she's still at Lover, she loves printing things. We give her a really hard time for it. So one of these days we're actually going to buy her a printer as a birthday gift. It's been decided.
Nice. Like a really, really old one?
Maybe.
Like dot matrix.
So excited.
Yeah. Makes the little noise as it zooms across.
And yeah, you cut off the edges.
Exactly. Some people listening to this are like, what the hell are they talking about?
What is that?
Paper? You rip it off?
A little Dunder Mifflin, yeah.
100%. So you print these out. You start with the mission statement. Yeah. What comes next?
Okay, so next is just like that team plan. Next is goals. So you'll remind them of what the team goals are, and you'll ask if there's any on there that either maybe they raise their hand for being the directly responsible person and they want to add that. Quota is almost always included. If they forget it, just give them a slight nudge of like, well, what about like some metrics or some numbers that you want to achieve? And they'll be like, oh yeah, my quota. And then this is also where you kick off the career conversation, you know, thinking about what you want to do next. What are some things that we need to work on this quarter and next to get you there?
Cool.
Yeah. Same as the team plan. Don't go too crazy. I would do maybe five. And then very beneficial to put them as SMART goals. So, you know, specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and then time bound. And use that more as a check than like the way you're creating the goal. Just look at the goal and ask yourself, you know, are these things true?
Mm-hmm. Can we reasonably hit all of these, you know, graduate an MBA, you know, get a master's in selling, you know, read 80 sales books. Like, you want to make sure that they're actually.
Yeah. And I it's funny because I find my team will often stretch themselves. But I think it's healthy too, to make sure if you have one of those reps that is always going to say, I'm going to hit 200% of my number, and they've literally never hit their number before, it's important for you to kind of gut check them on that. Mm-hmm. But what I'll often do is I'll do a stretch goal. So I'll turn that into the stretch goal and then kind of back into it.
Cool. Okay, yeah. I like that. So we've got our mission statement. We've got it printed out. We've got it scribbled down on. We started with our goals. So we've worked through team plan, sort of some metrics, and then career plan. Are those the three big pieces that kind of pull in, that you pull into?
Yeah, I think what will happen, there's kind of the last couple pieces on here. What will happen when you're creating some SMART goals is inevitably there's going to be some that are kind of are like squishy goals that you can't fit neatly into that that format. And so these become growth edges. And the way I think about growth edges are there, you can't make them a SMART goal. And they're usually something that might affect them at work and then also maybe outside of work. So mine for the longest time was the ability to like delegate and say no. And so that was on mine forever, was I just need to say like, hey, I'm not going to do this, or I need to give it the project to someone else. And so can't really fit that neatly into the SMART acronym, but it was one of my growth edges was delegation.
Cool. I know you said growth edges, but I'm going ahead with squishy goals.
Squishy goals. You can rename it squishy goals.
We're going to write a blog post about it afterwards. And so, yeah, I think we're going to have to go squishy goals.
Okay, squishy goals it is. The things that I say sometimes.
And so these squishy goals, they're basically things that don't fit, like you said, things that don't fit into that SMART framework. So it's more of it's something you can't get done in a quarter. It's sort of more like a reminder to yourself. Stop saying so many times.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. One rep was executive presence. You just wanted to practice that more in meetings. You cannot fit that nicely into a SMART goal, but it was something that was top of mind. One of my managers wanted to get more exposure to other departments and just be more of a liaison between different teams. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that we'll just talk about in one-on-ones in the future, but we can't fit nicely into a goal.
Gotcha. Okay. So it kind of leaves it a little bit more broad for these like general things that sort of reminders that you want to continue moving forward on.
Yeah. Another question I often ask in this section, even if, unless that section is the easiest section for your rep, is to also ask them how they're feeling about work-life balance. Often it's kind of hard to bring that topic up or you don't know the appropriate time. And so you can say, how do you feel like work-life balance is going? Is there any squishy goal that you want to put on here that has to do with, you know, your personal life? Do you want to be able to get out of here and go to the gym after work every day? Or you want to mm-hmm. get up and go on a run in the morning? And so sometimes that's a helpful exercise. And then they feel tied to that plan because it's not just a work-related thing.
Awesome. Cool. So what are some other questions if you're like, okay, so what are your squishy goals? And they just sit there and look at you like, the hell are squishy goals?
Which I think if you ask them that question, they probably will. yeah. I mean, what you ask is just like, what are some things in life you've been working on or you've noticed that you want to improve on? Is there something that you're struggling with? Just like you did the team, what's been hard lately for you? You'll hear a lot of things like organization, time management. Those things are, you know, you could probably fit that into a SMART goal. And if you can, I'd encourage you to. But having the concept of being more cognizant of my time or being better at preparing, those are some things that you might want to even pull from the SMART goals as themes and put on.
Hmm. Cool. So just kind of pulling up a higher level. All right, you're going to do this, but here's what this sort of ties into or builds into.
Yeah. So you can also say, hey, when you look at your different goals, is there a theme on here of something that you're trying to get better at? And some could also just be like, I want to be better prepared when I become an account executive, or I want to work on my leadership skills and get more exposure to management because I'm thinking about it as a career path.
Right on. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. So we've got our real goals, and then we have our squishy goals, or the growth edges, as you call them. So is that it? Or are there...
We have two more parts. And I think this is one of the more insightful parts of this whole planning exercise, which is called strengths and saboteurs. And saboteurs, the concept is like they are like weaknesses. But there's actually like a really tactical way that you can do the saboteur assessment. I think you were going to put the link in the bio at the end, but mm-hmm. there is an assessment online that you can take. It's a saboteur test. And it breaks it down into, I think there's seven different saboteurs that you can rank on. And they're very insightful. It's like a little mini therapy session when you read them. Yeah. And so once you do that, it's really helpful to ask them what they scored high on. And then you can have a conversation about it. Like, do you agree with that? Do you notice that these are things that you struggle with? And then they might also come up with some things that they've been working on, that things that they are doing that get in their own way is how I describe a saboteur.
Gotcha. And so will you have them take the test ahead of time, or will you kind of administer it to them, or how does that work?
Yeah, good question. So in prepping for this, I often will send them the sheet online so that they can see what we're going to work through and just ask them to think about it. But I'll say really explicitly, do not feel like you need to fill this out. And then I will also send them link to the saboteur test and have them take that. And so then we'll pull it up when we get to that section and talk about it. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, one of the saboteurs that's really common on sales teams is overachiever. And so the overachiever's probably already filled out the sheet, which is the dead giveaway.
That's fair.
Yeah.
And so when you say you'll share the sheet, it's basically the impact plan is what you're sharing ahead of time.
Exactly. So it's the thing that they're writing on.
Gotcha. So here's what we're gonna go through, and then you'll send the link and say, hey, go through this assessment or check out the assessment.
Exactly. And if you do this regularly, I do this every 6 months or so, they may have already taken the saboteur test. I encourage them to take it again. I often take it every 6 months and it changes a little bit. And so it's a good checkpoint too, and a good reminder to re-look over what those different saboteurs are. What's interesting is, as a team, it's interesting to get back together after you've done all of this and tally up what are the most common saboteurs on the team. And you'll start to see a trend that affects the culture. I had one team that we had no people on it that scored high on one of the saboteurs, which was victim. And that was my team that was always finding solutions. And then, you know, a couple of years later, I had that being a little bit more even. And it was a good reminder to me that your team is going to change, and the things that they do that get in their own way are also going to change.
Mm. Gotcha. So that's the sales assessment is, I'm guessing, is free, but pulling up all those stats, is that sort of like, that's where they get you got to pay for that?
Honestly,
or is it all free?
That whole test is like a free online test. Yeah. There's cool. Nothing you have to pay for. I'm sure that they, they've got other, like planning or consulting work that they do, but that's just one of their free online tools.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I thought that was going to be like, oh, if you want to get these metrics, now you got to buck up for the team.
No, it's pretty simple. It's like there's the 7 different saboteurs, 7 deadly sins maybe. And then you score on a scale of 0 to 10 on it. So if you're a 10, that saboteur is like really prevalent for you. You probably know it. And then if you score like a 3 or a 4, it's not really something that gets in your way.
Cool. What if you have no saboteurs? What if you're just all strengths?
You're like, what if you're just perfect? That right? Hasn't happened yet for
me. You break the test.
We have 2 or 3. Some people, like myself, score really high on like 5. But it's good.
Cool.
Yeah.
And the more you have, the better, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I see it. I'm an overachiever. Your team also, by the way, I think it's really important to tell them about the test before they take it and why they're taking it. Mm-hmm. And telling them things like, everyone is going to have something that gets in their own way. I had one team meeting where they took the saboteur test and people got really defensive and said, I don't see these as weaknesses. I see these as strengths. Like, these are the reasons that I'm so good at my job. And I think it's important for you to say, hey, actually, this is probably a reason that you're really good at sales, mm-hmm. And good at your job. But let's talk about also the ways that it could prevent you from being successful. But every strength has kind of a counter, and every weakness also has a strength. So that's for sure. Important balance.
For sure. I really, I've only read parts of the book, but a really interesting concept that came out of Carl Jung's work was his book was The King, Warrior, Lover, Magician. I think I got that right. I probably got one of them wrong. But he talked about those are the sort of 4 categories of and everybody has a little bit of each one in them. And there's the light side of each characteristic, and there's the shadow side. Right. And so it's like, you could be totally right in that the positive side is you do this, but there's also sort of every sort of positive trait or attribute has that sort of negative side. Absolutely. So that's kind of how you're queuing it up there.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you can say, where do you see it show up really positively for you? And so if you've got someone who's an overachiever, it's like, well, I always set my number at all costs. And then you go, okay, well, like, what are some ways that it's not helping you? Oh, well, I stay at work till 8 p.m. every night and I'm really stressed out. And so, yeah, asking them what the light and dark side of each of those is a pretty insightful exercise. I've had a lot of people have big aha moments in that. I've also had some people who really didn't want to talk about it. But for the most part, you'd be surprised. People are really, no one's ever, they've never had a boss ask them about those things in that way and also come with data. And so people usually want to dig into it a little bit more. They'll have questions.
Cool. So how do you open up that conversation? Just, you know, do you have them share the test ahead of time that you go through it? Do you go through it together? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, I'll often just say like, hey, why don't you pull up your saboteur? And here's another thing, I bring up mine. So I think it's not fair to, in that relationship, to say, hey, what are all the things that you're terrible about? And then not tell them what my weaknesses are. So if I see that they don't want to talk about it, they're a little nervous about it, sometimes I'll go over it, my assessment first, and say, here's how it shows up for me. And then ask them kind of what they noticed and ask them to like, what do you disagree with? Are there any on here that you just don't think are true? Let them have some ownership and control over it. But for the most part, people are actually pretty open about talking about it. And the idea is that everyone has them, you know, no one kind of gets out scot-free without them.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So if they're nervous, you start by sharing yours. Mm-hmm. And then how do you feel about, and then you ask them, like, how do you feel about yours? What do you agree with? What do you disagree with?
Yeah. And then where does it, like, the best question is, where does this show up at work, or where does this show up for you that you want to change? And sometimes that will help you create a squishy goal, right? If someone says, I scored really high on stickler. The stickler is that you're a rule follower and you really like if it was in the rules, you wanted to go that way. And maybe it shows up because rules of engagement, when someone breaks the rules, it makes them really angry. And so the, you know, a squishy goal becomes, I need to be a little bit more understanding when rules of engagement are broken, and I need to handle that a different way.
Cool. Mm-hmm. I like that. So where does this, so the powerful questions, where does this show up at work? Yeah. Where does it show up where you want to change? Those are really strong nuggets. What else have we had?
What do you think are, you know, what do you think are some things that we can do to help you when you're in a moment like that? Or are there environmental factors at work? Are there ways that this team is functioning that is not helping that saboteur, that maybe it's bringing that up for you more and more? That's really good feedback for you as a manager to hear that. Or are there situations that you put yourself in that make that saboteur go into, you know, overdrive? Yeah. So awesome. That's one piece. The other piece is the opposite, which is strengths. By the way, if you have someone who's really nervous about the saboteur piece, which doesn't happen too often, but start with the strengths, like really, you know, boost their confidence. I usually like to end with it though, because it's a really good feel good moment to talk about all the things that they're good at. Mm. And the idea and why you're putting this on your goal sheet is because you're saying, what are the things that I'm really good at, or the things I get in my own way with, that are going to help me either achieve these goals, or they're possibly going to help me or hurt me in achieving them? Yeah. And on this strength piece, shockingly or unshockingly, this is the hardest section for reps. Mm-hmm. They feel very uncomfortable talking about what they're good at. Or some do. I'm sure some managers are chuckling and they're like, no, I've got people who talk about this all day long. I will every single time come in with at least three or four strengths that I see in that rep. And if they're having a hard time, I kick it off right away. But you always want to have this be a moment of like, here are the things that I see in you that are strengths that you can use to your own advantage.
Awesome. That's a really good spot. Good place to start.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did. I remember we did on our sales team, we did a strengths finder assessment. Mm-hmm. It gives you like the different sort of strengths and the different colors. And it was like, it gave us a really strong frame of reference to sort of have that conversation as a group and realize when people were, you know, acting a certain way. It provides a lot of extra context behind that.
Yeah. So just like you do the saboteurs as a test, you could also, if you wanted to make it a little bit more data-driven, you could do a test for the strengths. Or like on both of those, you could totally get rid of the test and just ask them, what are things that you're doing that get in your own way, and what are your strengths? There's no real wrong way to do it. It's just you want them to acknowledge what cards they're playing with when it comes to building these goals and achieving them.
Right on. Mm-hmm. Cool. And I love that you ended on a positive as you sort of get into the meaty stuff, because I could see how ending it there would be
wah, wah.
Wah. And, you know, what is it? The peak end bias? It's like we judge, we rate the, our overall assessment of an experience is based on like the peak moment and how the end and at the end.
Yeah. This is why most of my Peloton rides, I was like, it was a 10 and I'm dying. It's because they always end it with the hardest part.
Yeah. All of your, you said Peloton rides?
Yeah. I'm really into Peloton lately.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's like, I cycle. So are you referring to like in the Peloton, like you're riding in a big group? Is this a race or is this cycling thing I don't know of?
No, it's okay. It's a company based out of New York and they make indoor cycling bikes that you put in your home.
Ah, okay.
They created this entire empire off of kind of recorded and live classes that you take at home.
Gotcha. Sort of like Zwift and Sufferfest and all that stuff.
Yep. And it kicks my butt, but it's good.
You live in San Francisco?
Mm-hmm.
I think on behalf of the cycling community, we have to call you a wuss because it's your winter. It's like our summer. Come on.
Well, what Jack London says that that the coldest winter he ever experienced was a summer in San Francisco. So
get your legs moving and you'll be fine.
And I really have no excuse because literally my bike is in my house. It's not even outside.
Yeah, that's fair. But I totally know what you mean. I've done some races myself and you're like in the middle. You're like, oh man, this is brutal. But
yeah.
By the time you finish, it's like,
yeah, you're like, that was the best ride of my life.
Yeah, I'm going to do it again for sure.
You trick yourself. Totally.
Cool. So we've got our team goals. We've got our individual goals. How do we make sure? And so it's really great. I like how you've got the accountability on the team side with individuals sort of accountable for each of the team goals. And you've probably replicated that in the individual plans. One of the things I've seen people do this, you know, you put all the work into planning and then there's no follow through. So how do you make sure that you continue to get pickup on this, people continue to show up and actually work through these? Because I imagine, like you said, for the team goals, if you just sort of do it once and there's no follow through, you're not going to want to do it again.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. And I think that's why it's so important when you make that SMART goal that you use the T, which is time bound. When do you want to achieve this? And so I'll ask them, you know, what are ways that you want to check in on your progress against this? No matter what, I, as a leader, will always bring this up once a month. Maybe at the start of a month is a really good time to do it. And honestly, the conversation happens really naturally. You just pull it up on your computer or you pull up the written version and you say, let's go through this. Like, let's do a refresh of what they are and what have we already achieved and what haven't we? And then I often will encourage them to get an accountability buddy on the team and they swap individual impact plans and then hold each other accountable to it as well by just asking, how's it going with, you know, that executive presence that you're working on.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So everybody gets an accountability buddy and then you're reviewing it as the manager at the beginning of every month.
Exactly. Yeah. It's kind of a conversation starter. I often will use this as when we have our career conversations, I'll bring that up in tandem. And it's a powerful thing when they know that those goals are also part of the career growth and how they get there. And so they'll feel far more committed to them as well.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. So we got revisiting it regularly. I feel like this has been awesome. I didn't even look at the notes that we took. I've just been just continuing to ask questions. Yeah. I'm like, this is awesome. So I'm trying to think here, what have we missed? You know what? I would love to, you know, to ask, like, can you talk about the impact that you've seen on teams that, that have implemented this?
Yeah. So that first example I gave at the beginning, where we realized something had to give because we were adding a ton of reps and we didn't have an outbound program. It was literally what kicked off the impetus to do more outbound as an AE team. And I'll tell you, as a leader, I had been trying to get them to do outbound for 3 or 4 months before that, and nothing was sticking. And once they had the idea of doing it, it all took off. So it was the thing that created all of our cadences, got everyone creating goals around how many outbound meetings they were going to set. Mm-hmm. And then it was a constant conversation topic at team meetings. And now the team is known for almost outbounding too much. I need to rein it in. But that was kind of one impact I saw. For individuals, I mentioned the woman who created or realized that she wanted to go into enablement. Mm-hmm. About 6 months later, we actually promoted her onto an enablement role that didn't exist at Lever. And now she's doing enablement over at Brex. I had one gentleman, I printed off his as an example. And this is when he had first joined my small business team. He's now on our mid-market team. And some of the things he put on here, it's great. He said like some of the reasons that, or things he wanted to get better at is he didn't feel like he was an industry expert. And now he is our go-to guy when new reps start. They're constantly going to Spencer and asking him about recruiting and tech. So you'd be surprised when people really put it down on paper and they really live by those goals. It really changes a lot. And now I feel like I'm very good at delegating.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And right on Spencer for being the industry expert that everybody goes to.
Yeah, awesome. We just opened a new office in Toronto, and he got such a reputation for this that he is moving to Toronto for 6 months just to set up that team. So these things are powerful. And as the manager, I had no idea that he felt that way until we put it down on paper.
Well, and now that it's on down on paper, you can look back and just having something to point to and look at all the progress that we make. On some of these soft skills, it's hard to even remember, hey, back a year or two ago, I was struggling with this. And to be able to point, like have this relic of 2 years ago that says, hey, you kind of sucked at this, you sucked at that, you're trying to do this. It's like, you look back and you're like, man, I've come so far.
Yeah. And I don't actually do this, but I feel like I should, is taking those plans and then marking them up on what you achieved. So you have your goal and then you write your actual, and then these things become excellent interview guides when you do go to your next job. You know, you often feel like you can't remember all the things that you worked on and got better at. And that's a very good way to put it down on paper.
Yeah. A note to Kelly's team, if any of you were thinking of quitting.
Look, I created a guide for you.
This is basically your outboarding plan.
it's kind of funny though, but I talk about this with my team all the time. And actually it's commonly something I talk about when I launch these are the skills you take outside of Lever. I feel like as managers, we sometimes get so freaked out that people are going to go quit on you and interview somewhere else. But if you just talk about it and you're constantly investing in, okay, well, what do you want to be better at when you go to your next job? It's a powerful thing that when people feel like you're really investing in care, they don't leave.
So true. I remember in the early days of the company when it was just a few of us, it's not like the core, like first few people stuck around, and we still have a good chunk of them of like the first five. There's probably three still left, which is awesome. And then sort of in that journey from like 3 to 10 to 15, our turnover was like, people were lasting like 6 months. And then we just went, you know, almost, I think it was a year, 13 months without any voluntary churn on the, like for the whole company, which is, I think was definitely got to be a record. Especially because in that period of time, we grew pretty substantially. And I'd say the two big things that we started doing differently were hiring, being a lot more intentional with our hiring, and making sure we're finding people whose goals line up with our goals and who want to work on the skills that they're going to learn here. And then two is just investing more in the people and the one-on-ones and figuring out how to get better at that and how we can invest more in the people so that they're on that pretty high growth trajectory.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that we often as leaders just don't know how to have those conversations sometimes, or we don't know what to invest in, right? Because I know I am guilty of this, is the ways I invest in my team or ways that I would want someone to invest in me when I was a rep. And this is a really good way to figure out that might be what they want, but it might not be. And it's a tangible way that they can go, wow, you know, someone actually like asked me what I wanted my work-life balance. No one has asked me that before. And I really do feel like I'm making progress. I think that's the other reason people will leave, is they don't feel like they're making progress fast enough. And it's because you often aren't writing down and reflecting on where you were and how you got there.
If you're not talking about it, if you're not checking in about it, then how can you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We tend to have the bias of assume we didn't achieve as much as we did, or we think that we could go do better elsewhere, but you kind of forget where you started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And especially if you're managing people, you sort of forget that exactly what it was like when you were first getting started. Right. Mm-hmm. And so to try and relate, right, your work prop, like if I think back to when I started as an AE, it was 15 years ago, maybe a bit longer. And like, that's a long time to remember, like, okay, I remember sitting in the chair and like staring at the phone and you know, like you can remember some of the things, but you can't remember. It can be kind of challenging to relate. And if you're not able to do that, you can't get in their head and figure out, hey, what's, you know, why are they feeling this way? Like this conversation is that you provided here is just such a powerful framework because now you don't have to read minds. You can just ask them what's on their mind.
I can't tell you how many aha moments I've had as a manager for a particular person, or all of a sudden I'll start to see a theme on my team and I'll say, I haven't been investing in that area, or everyone is struggling with this. We need to talk about it. I had like one of my favorite moments doing one of these. I did it. This is an excellent tool, by the way, when you're ramping someone. Mm-hmm. So maybe your third one-on-one or something, you do something like this. And I had a rep who at the end of it, she was like, I feel so heard. I've never felt so heard before because no one's asked me these questions before. And I hadn't thought of these. And so when I come out with insights, I feel like I was really listened to. Yeah.
That's really powerful.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything more than we can ask for than that.
Yeah. And I think like the ways that you kind of screw this up is by you as a manager not being as invested in it. Like multitasking in one of these sessions is the worst thing ever. This has to be your full dedicated attention for an hour to an hour and a half for it to actually pay off. Because you're asking people some pretty personal questions about what they want to achieve and what they think they're struggling with.
Mm-hmm. And it'd be really, really a bad experience for them if you're just kind of nodding along and they're like, and they're sharing something deeply personal and you're like, cool. So, and
then yeah, like, you feel like you're a victim. Okay, whatever. So anyway, moving on.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You got to be fully, fully present. And same goes for that team impact plan. I think it's, you know, I am so guilty of this as I am multitasking a lot in meetings. This is one of those meetings you cannot multitask in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's for me, multitasking in meetings is one of the things that drives me crazy. So I'm like phones down, laptops down. I'll call people out because I'm like, we're like, if we can get the laptops down and phones down, we can finish this meeting way shorter and then you can go get your stuff done. But again, that's probably one of my, I don't know, saboteurs or.
No, it sounds like if you were in a you're doing a team impact plan, that maybe one of the norms and commitments would be if we're going to spend time together, like no laptops, or we need to be fully present.
For sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a downside to that.
Maybe.
Probably not.
I mean, yeah. You have shorter meetings. Maybe you're just like, hey, let's do 30 minute meetings and just everyone puts their laptop in the corner and then we'll get through this faster.
Totally. Kelly, I feel like I learned a ton here. Wanted to ask you, get a couple of sort of the lightning round questions because I find wanted to get guests. I get so many great guests on and there's a couple of questions that I want to ask everybody that, just add a little bit of context. I have to say everybody the same three questions. It's just, I've picked up so many little tips and tricks from these last three questions that we just decided to keep doing it. Cool. So first one, how do you get people to respond to your emails? So in a sales context, how do you get customers to, or prospects to respond to your emails?
Yeah, always provide value is my motto. And so be really clear, think about what the customer is thinking about and what they might care about, and then provide value in that sense. So it could be as simple as including a link to some research that they could find valuable, but it could also just be addressing their problems and really understanding what they're thinking about.
Cool. What about when you're on a call, whether it's a cold call or it's a sort of an Are We a Fit call, discovery call, and they're kind of giving you the brush off? How do you handle that?
I call it out. You know, I think if you're just really human about it and you address it front on and say, I'm getting the sense that whatever I'm saying is not resonating with you or you don't want to talk. One is that people always like to say no to you. So they'll be like, no, no, no. And they'll tell you why, or maybe they'll tell you the truth and they'll tell you why you're getting the brush off.
Mm-hmm. Cool. It's one of those like pattern interrupts where people are just, they're expecting, you know, the pitch question. And they're like, no. And then they're going to hang up on you. But if you, this sort of breaks that pattern.
Yeah. Plus it's just really empowering to be able to call people out and be like, hey, I'm a human being on the other line too. I'm just trying to do my job.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got a number. I'm just trying to get something done here. Okay. You also have a team of salespeople. Like, let's try and be kind to each other.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. I totally agree. Okay. And so last one, what do you do? And maybe this is you, maybe this is your team, but what do you all do when you need to push at the end of a quarter? And ideally, we don't need to push in the first place, but sometimes it happens.
No, it happens all the time. I make sure that we have some fun with it, get the team really rallied behind the goal. And even if people have blown out their number, get them all bought in. And so I try to keep the energy up on the floor as much as possible by doing silly things. We always bring in breakfast on the last day of the month. And we all wear our Lever t-shirts. And so if you just feel like a big team and you have a ton of energy, I think that helps a bunch.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
And I can't remember I've got it written down in my notes here. And I can't remember if we talked about the cold call role play.
Yeah, we did. So I'm going to talk about Lever.
Okay.
So I'll do a little Lever pitch.
Are you selling me Lever? Are you selling me to come work at Lever?
Oh, I could do both, but why don't we do I'm selling you Lever.
Okay.
Yeah.
So paint me a picture.
So we'll have you play, usually we're calling recruiters, but I'm going to have you play a sales manager because I think that'll make the most sense for this group.
It's a bit of a stretch for me, but I think I can manage. So let me stretch my acting muscle. Okay. All right. Ready?
Yeah, let's do this.
Ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin, the sales manager.
Hey, Colin, this is Kelly over at Lever. Does that ring a bell? Have you heard of us?
No.
Oh, okay. No, it's all good. I kind of figured. Do you mind if I take about a minute here to tell you why I'm calling? We can decide if we want to keep talking.
How'd you get my number?
I got your number because I've been noticing you guys are hiring a lot, and I saw your main line on the website.
Cool.
Are you guys hiring a lot?
We are. We've got 4 open recs for SDRs and account execs.
Okay. Yeah, I noticed that. I've actually been talking to a couple of the other sales managers at your company, and the thing that they've been telling me over and over is it's just really hard to find really good talent. Are you experiencing that?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't work in an agency. I'm not a recruiter. I actually work at a software company, which is Lever, and we're helping automate a lot of that process. So similar to how you use Outreach or SalesLoft, part of our product is to help you reach more passive talent in a more effective way.
Interesting.
And yeah.
It's called Lever?
Lever. Yeah.
L-E-V-E-R.
Uh-huh. Or Lever.
I thought it was Lever.
That's okay. That's the Canadian or the Aussie way of pronouncing it. So maybe we could take like 15 minutes. I can actually show you how this thing works. Would you be interested in that?
That sounds good.
Okay.
Awesome.
Lever and Lever. I mean, we even have employees who call it Lever.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one thing that it's like the pronunciation, and like when you're thinking about naming your company, it's like the pronunciation, the domain name. Mm-hmm. We used to be called, the company I started was like Voltage CRM, which is super easy to like type out. And then it was carb.io, which is the easiest thing, but our name was Carburetor. And there are 3 or 4 technically correct ways of spelling Carburetor in the English language. So we got a bunch of random stuff, but the domain was the best because it was just carb.io. And like typing that, you could just so quickly, and not that I'm complaining about the brand, but predictable revenue is a pain in the ass to type into an email. And I've definitely gotten it wrong. You've missed like an N or a V or whatever a couple of times.
My favorite one is because Lever is also a soap, Lever 2000. Mm. We once got an email from a very diehard soap enthusiast who wanted to provide feedback that we changed the formula of the soap, and that he and his wife were really disturbed and wanted us to go back to the original formula.
Oh man.
Yeah. And we were like, how should we respond to this?
Oh, that's incredible.
But he was just so passionate about the soap, you know, so I had a lot of respect for that.
Have you ever heard of a book called Letters from a Nut?
Mm-mm.
Ted L. Nancy. So Jerry Seinfeld did the forward.
Okay.
And it's this book from maybe the 90s, I think. And it's a book of letters exactly like that. But it's satirical. It's written just to like mess with people.
That's amazing.
He'll complain about the shape of the spoons at the restaurant and like provide like the strangest compliments. And you can see what he sent. And it's an actual letter because it was from the 90s, like early 90s. You see the actual letter and the actual response. And some of them are just hilarious. So it sounds like you need to maybe submit this one.
I think I do. Yeah. The other is if you just have some downtime is just go through some Yelp reviews. People get really, really descriptive. They're filling out Yelp reviews.
Of lever of
No,
your.
not of lever. I don't think.
Oh,
Lever,
okay.
no, but I'm just saying in general, like restaurant reviews, like especially the people who have elite status. If you go through some of theirs, people are just they've made it part of their life.
The things we invest our time in, for sure.
Yep. Exactly.
Kelly, thank you so much. I feel like I learned a ton from you. If anybody is like, hey, I want to work for Kelly, I want to buy Lever or whatever it is, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn all the time. So Kelly Del Curto, and I'm the director of sales over at Lever.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Kelly.
Yeah, thank you so much.